refusal before the jury, I would suggest to you that much better evidence, either way, as Senator Hill and others have mentioned, is the evidence of the field sobriety tests themselves. And that motivation was recognized in the State versus Green case on page 525, where the court quoted from South Dakota v. Neville, and it was referring to the breath test, not to the field sobriety test, but I think the same rationale applies. And it said, in referring to the breath test, the state wants respondent to choose the test for the inference of intoxication arising from a positive blood alcohol test is far stronger than that arising from a refusal to take the test. And I would say that rationale applies here. However, there is a difference between the breath test and field sobriety tests in the present language, and this statute doesn't change that, and that is the loss of license. There, in other words, there's an additional sanction that goes with a refusal to take the breath test. And I would suggest to you that that is at least as much a motivator to people to take the breath test. And so I would suggest to you that in that aspect, the field sobriety test is different, and it isn't necessarily going to motivate people to take the test. One final thing, if you can envision, I realize there isn't much sympathy for the person that's being stopped by many people.
Madam Chair, let me interrupt a moment. Are you suggesting, as similar to Justice Gillette's suggestion, that perhaps we ought to add to this bill a provision that would lead to suspension of a license for refusal to take a sobriety test?
No, I'm certainly not making that suspension.
It sounded like you were.
I'm not certainly not making that suggestion. I realize I left myself open to that comment, Senator Shoemaker.
Sounds like a great idea.
I believe that would be onerous, and I think that would be excessive. The only thing I wanted to point out in closing was that there was some reference to stops, and the person stopped down on the road, and typically this is late at night, it's dark, it's raining, et cetera, et cetera. And under this bill, the person will now they get two sets of instructions as to their rights. This bill will add a third set. In other words, before they're going to be under this bill, before the person is asked to do the to do the field sobriety test, he's going to be read language to the effect that says, if you refuse, it will be admissible, and it will be admissible before the jury. Later on, the person is Mirandized, and everyone's familiar with that language, told they have a right not to speak. And then they're given quite an elaborate list of rights and consequences with respect to the breath test. And I can't help but think that it's going to be a very confusing situation for a person to know exactly what rights they have, what's going to be admissible, what's not going to be admissible, in view of the fact of the nervousness and the natural tension that has been recognized already. I don't know how to address that, but I think it's relevant at any rate.
Thank you. Jim Stevenson?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Captain James H. Stevenson, Assistant Bureau Commander of the Patrol Bureau of the Oregon State Police. You have my written testimony, which basically rehashes a lot of things that have been pointed out. I just wanted to kind of come from you from a different angle. As a police officer, throughout my career, I've arrested hundreds of people for driving under the influence of intoxicants. And I think you must realize that a person can always refuse the breath test. So the case is basically made by the police officer at the rest or stop location. And so the sobriety tests are the essential ingredient for for determining that the person is under the influence. And this will greatly enhance the case in court for the jury to better understand the situation when the police officer made that stop. It gives a better picture of what actually happened. That concludes what I had to say.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yes.
Senator Hill.
Captain, so you just, usually you ask, you give the field sobriety test only when the person refuses the breath test, or do you give them both?
No. I won't spend a lot of time running through the sequence, but the officer obviously sees the person doing something wrong. He stops the person, detects alcoholic beverage on their breath. Through conversation, determines that the person may be affected by the alcohol they've consumed. Ask that individual to perform the sobriety test. Based on their performance, either the officer will go ahead and arrest the person or let them go. The intoxilizer breath test comes after the arrest time, and you now have transported that individual to the facility, the jail, station, or whatever, and then ask them to do the breath test.
Okay, that explains a lot. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Other questions? That's all of the folks who've signed up with respect to Senate Bill 130. Then, unless anybody else out there is going to start waving their arms, we'll move to Senate Bill 405 and do work session. And this has to do with gathering of medical evidence, requesting.
Senate Bill 405 is at the request of the Department of Justice for the Oregon District Attorneys Association. It's a bill we just heard recently. You'll recall it has to do with what Dale Penn from Marion County's District Attorney's Office came in and testified regarding when police officers ask doctors or other medical personnel for to have tests performed. There are some amendments that were drafted in keeping with the discussion that took place at our public hearing. I'll distribute those to you now. They are 405-1.
That was, I believe, I just don't recall exactly whose suggestion that was, but that was to make sure that we weren't, that a police officer didn't get in and direct the doctor to do something that was in a life-threatening emergency situation. Senator Brenneman has moved Senate Bill 405-1 amendments dated 4/21. Objections to those amendments? So ordered. Senator Brenneman has moved Senate Bill 405 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Jack, anything else? Senator Springer.
Madam Chair, I know we heard this recently, but I'm trying to recall and if this is one of those bills where somebody is afraid they might get sued, so we're going to make sure that never happens, or if somebody actually has been sued and this is dealing with a real problem.
I don't know about suing. Dale Penn was here in support of the bill. And I think they did have evidence that that certain kinds of medical personnel that were reluctant if they weren't accustomed to taking directions or following the requests of the police officers. Senator Hill.
I'm sure, as I understand it, the medical practitioners could still would not be relieved from liability if they did not perform according to medically accepted procedures. And also before that, I think that the county or the jurisdiction itself is still open to suit on matters other than medical questions.
Okay. Can someone tell me if medically acceptable manner exists anywhere else in statute when defining the standard of care a physician or other healthcare practitioners to exercise? seems to me that's different from what we generally understand the standard of care to be. Or maybe Mr. Penn can tell me that it's intended to be the same thing, in which case the clarification might be helpful to me and others.
Okay, why don't you come up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Springer. My name is Dale Penn, representing ODAA on this bill. This language is precisely the same language as is contained in 803-something. This is the statute that presently allows civil immunity only in implied consent drunk drive cases. This bill simply takes the exact same language. The medically acceptable manner was the same language that was already in the statute for drunk drives, expands it for other crimes other than drunk drives. That's all we've done here. So that that phrase is from the present statute, which applies to implied consent civil immunity for drawing blood in drunk drive cases. The intent, I believe, is simply to show that it is an acceptable medical procedure in the community and in the profession.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Thank you. Senator Brenneman has moved Senate Bill 405 to the floor as amended. Are there further discussion?
So,
Senator Springer.
I'll just offer, I guess, a couple concerns. I would be much more comfortable if we were to have a warrant procedure in here. I think in the age of the telephone, that's certainly possible, and I think it would be in everyone's best interest to have that. Secondly, I'm a little concerned about the physician who takes an oath, which we discussed on the floor a couple weeks ago, whose responsibility it is to serve the needs of the patient, not the needs of the state. And I think we put a physician in a very difficult position when we permit them to search body orifices for evidence, which I believe this would do, which has no other reasonable or justifiable medical purpose. And I don't want to put doctors or other healthcare practitioners in that position.
You have the amendment which does not require him to do that.
I appreciate that. I don't think there's any way you can make a doctor do it anyway. The doctor refused.
Yeah.
Which I think many physicians would, as a matter of the oath that they took, or other moral feelings. There are physicians in the state, and I respect their decision not to perform certain kinds of procedures, which are, quote, medically acceptable, but they're exercising their moral responsibility, what they feel to be their moral responsibility and their oath that they took.
Well, the doctrine of implied consent, does that, of informed consent, does that apply when you're conducting a criminal investigation and the state employs a physician to assist it in that investigation? I wouldn't think that that would require the informed consent of the suspect. It would be a funny use of that doctrine. It would really get in the way of any kind of effective investigation, it seems to me. In that circumstance, a physician is serving as an agent of the state, I would think, and not as a doctor for the suspect. Am I not correct in that?
Madam Chair, I would remind you that at our public hearing, Mr. Penn stated that in all cases, the doctor would, in fact, be acting of as an agent of the state.
Right.
But I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. So,
but surely the consent of the suspect to the doctor's
Okay, are we ready?
I don't think I've changed anybody's mind, but that's...
We're ready. Senator Brenneman.
Just the motion, then. Just move the amendments.
Senator Brenneman has moved Senate Bill 405 as amended to the floor with a due press recommendation. Call the roll, please, Pat.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
No.
All right, motion carried. Thank you very much. Okay, let's move to Senate Bill. It gets a little hard to see this time of night.
Good, let's go home.
1163? I think so. Senate Bill 1163, we've got two more left, folks. Hang in there with us. It probably won't take very long at all.
Senate Bill 1163 is at the request of the Department of Justice. You will recall that this is the DNA bill. There are two sets of amendments that I'll be passing out to you.
And I would call the folks who went out in the hall to come up back up here, and the amendments may or may not be relevant at this point. Yes, Jack, go ahead.
The First Amendment is designed to include those persons in custody in county jails as well as facilities of the Department of Corrections. The committee asked for that. I asked legislative counsel to modify that somewhat further because the way the language was written, it looked like only those folks in county jails and this is somewhat technical, but only those folks that were in county jails on a misdemeanor conviction would apply to it. I wanted to ensure that it would apply to folks serving county jail time as a condition of probation, too, because I thought that was the committee's intent. The Second Amendment relates to the ability of the state police to charge the counties for the tests that they're performing.
And that was, if you'll recall, we had testimony from the sheriff Burke, who wanted the locals involved and tested, and I suggested they go find out what kind of fiscal impact that would be. We didn't want to kill the bill by including a lot of folks out there in the jails if it were going to cost the state too much money. They came back with some numbers and have been in consultation, and let's hear what you think about these amendments.
Madam Chair,
and whether you need them.
I'm Eric Wasson with the Department of Justice, and to my right is Sheriff David Burks of Lane County, and to my left, Captain Rich Brook of the Oregon State Police Crime Lab System. We have talked in the hall. I think we have arrived at a solution you'll find acceptable, but let me state first of all that the three of us recommend against the amendment to the bill that would allow the state crime lab system to bill the counties for cost analysis.
So dash 2 is off the table. I think that's what it means, right?
Dash 2.
Dash 2 would be off the table, and that's the one I had as a backstop piece, and I will take that off the table now.
All right, and our reason for requesting that be taken off the table is Sheriff Burks has agreed on behalf of the Sheriff's Association to accept the cost of withdrawing a blood, and there is a cost there. He is reluctant now and doesn't feel at this point he has authority to accept for them the cost of having analysis done. Captain Brook is reluctant to charge the sheriffs for that additional expense. I think it is probably, this matter probably can be handled within the crime lab system itself without incurring overtime. The crime lab could simply set back the schedule of testing these samples. There would take greater delay. There would be extended time for data banking individual samples, but if you didn't incur overtime, you would just take longer to do the job, and it wouldn't incur a dollar impact. And so I think that would probably resolve the situation.
And let's assume that this whole matter will be somewhere down the Ways and Means for discussion, and if they cut it back, it will be on the first served or some priority basis. I'm sure they would give you some ability to prioritize.
I believe that my own way of thinking that probably the samples taken from the stock population in the jails would be a priority sample because they would be subject to release very soon, whereas you could prioritize downward samples taken from persons just entering prison on long terms of incarceration.
I think we have our answer. And are you satisfied that Dash 1 allows what Sheriff Brooks wanted it to do? It does provide for...
I believe that it does.
It, in fact, follows the sheriff's suggestion that we delete a portion of the language so that it would, in fact, apply to folks in jails as well. And as I said, I don't think I explained it very well, but as I said, it appeared to me that just by doing that, we would only be covering those persons who are actually sentenced to the county jail. The courts have ruled that imposition of probation is not a sentence, so I had it changed to include those folks who, for instance, would get 5 years probation with a year county jail as a condition of probation. I assume that's what everybody wants.
I believe it is. As a matter of fact, that probably includes most of the people we want to get.
Okay.
Move the dash one.
Senator Hill moves Senate Bill 1163-1 amendments. Are there objections? So ordered. It'll be caught at Ways and Means. I don't think it does have a Ways and Means referral. We may have to send it to Ways and Means given the kind of impact we have on it. But yeah, we'll move it to the floor and we'll see where it goes.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1163 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill has moved 1173 as amended to the floor. 1163. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Mayor Brennan?
Aye.
Rockman?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
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 Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. I do want to make a statement about this. This was one of the great compromise bills that held up the Washington legislature from going into special session. And I think you all out in the audience ought to take note of that, that this committee has passed it without a lot of fighting,
fuming,
and fussing. And I do think that even if we don't, with whatever money, if any, that comes from Ways and Means, it's important to have it on the books so you can get started whenever you can get some money and some means for funding it. Thank you. Then the last bill on the agenda tonight is Senate Bill 293. And correct me, Jack, if this isn't the last bill.
It is the last
bill. It is the last bill.
I have the 270.
293. The all that one is off.
Oh, okay.
267 is a perennial here. We're just waiting with that one. It's carried over. Carried over for. It's the grand elephant bill for some time that it's needed in emergency. Senate Bill 293 is the otherwise known as the Delcon Shield Copper 7 extension of tort liability issues.
It is. There are several amendments I'm going to be passing out to you. First is an amendment by the sponsor which affects the statute of ultimate repose. The second amendment, which is actually -3, deletes the language in the original bill having to do with the exclusion of the 1987 tort reform caps. The third amendment, which is -4, distinguishes between, let me make sure I get this right, devices that are approved as opposed to those not approved by the Food and Drug Administration. And then the final amendment, which is at the request of the sponsors as well, distinguishes between those devices which are no longer on the market as opposed to those that are currently on the market. So there are several issues here. I'll give you the amendments now so you can go through them.
And I need for you, we need for you, Jack, to identify the amendments on from whence they come. Or from, I guess we have an amendment, the amendments that are from the proponents of the bill.
-1 and -5 are from the proponents, the law firm of Williams, Trout, Wine, and Bowersox. The other two are amendments
that we requested drafted as options for the committee.
That's correct.
For our Chinese menu approach, if you will.
Okay.
So actually, let's hear from the, let's hear momentarily from the proponents of the bill for their amendments. Whoever's going to come up and explain the amendments that the proponents have requested, and then we'll see where we are.
Who gave us the book?
I did.
Oh, for the plaintiffs, okay. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Mike Williams. This is Gail Troutline with me, my law partner and also my wife, by the way. We have tried to answer the questions that the committee posed to us at the first hearing with three sets of materials that have been provided to you. The first memorandum is entitled, Why Oregon Duck on Shield Victims Need This Bill. It has a number of exhibits attached to it for each of you, trying to explain why the bankruptcy proceeding makes it necessary for this bill to pass for Oregon women to have the same chance as women in other states. The second memorandum we prepared, you have the short version of it. It's to answer your question, Madam Chair, about comparing Oregon's statute of ultimate repose to those of every other state. We gave your counsel a copy of this notebook, which contains every state's statute, if there is one, and every controlling case decision on that statute, if there is one. The memo summarizes that material. The third item we provided to you is the notebook handed to you just now about the Copper 7 intrauterine device, explaining why it has been criticized by many doctors as defective and why it is part of this bill also.
Okay, if you go through the amendments, I guess I want to find out what you...
All right.
Exactly the first, what the amendments are and what they do. And
sure.
What, you
know, the First Amendment was actually provided last time also. It's dash one.
Right. Okay.
What it does is attempt to correct the statute of limitations for IUD cases, not the statute of repose. And last time we also gave you a decision as an example of how the law works unfairly now for IUD victims. The amendment would take care of the problem that the courts have found that says a woman who suffers a minor infection from an IUD, even if she believes she has not suffered any permanent injury whatsoever from that IUD, must still file a claim within 2 years of that date of the minor infection. This amendment would take care of that problem and allow a woman who later discovered that she had suffered permanent infertility to sue within 2 years of that date of discovery. The other amendment we have proposed is dash five, and it attempts to address the problems that Dr. Prohaska brought before you when he testified at the first hearing about the desirability of some of the IUDs that are currently on the market. What this amendment would do would be to exempt any IUD on the market now or any IUD that comes on the market in the future from this bill, so that this bill would only apply to those IUDs that have already been taken off the market and were on the market at a time when medical knowledge about the development of pelvic infections was quite different.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Uh,
Senator Shoemaker, I guess I, let's assume that we set aside the issue of the, you believe that the Dash One amendments are necessary to clarify the mission of the original Dalcon Shield?
Yes, I'm afraid that given Oregon court's interpretation of the statute of limitations in other contexts, and given a recent decision by federal court here in Oregon in an IUD case, that many of the Dalcon Shield victims, even if they don't have a statute of repose problem, would still face their claim being thrown out because, unless this First Amendment is made part of the bill. And we've given you the case decisions that are the rationale for that amendment.
Okay, Senator Shoemaker.
It might help me, Mike, if you could explain the reasons why you need the Dalcon Shield portion of the bill.
Right.
Rather than forcing me to read all this and try to absorb it, I'm sure you can summarize
it. You mean Copper Center?
No, I mean Dalcon Shield.
Oh, okay.
I mean Dalcon, because I raised a lot of questions about why do you need that, since it's in bankruptcy anyway, and I wasn't satisfied with the answers, and you prepared all this in response to those questions, I believe.
Yes.
And I think it might be helpful if I had heard from you